Hello, today is October 31st, 2006, and you're listening to the Network Security Podcast. Welcome to episode 50. Happy Halloween, everybody. Took the kids out, had a good night trick-or-treating. In fact, my kids had such a good haul that at the end of the night, my youngest son couldn't carry his pumpkin anymore. It was a lot of fun. I'm going to get right into the interview tonight. It's a very long discussion with Brian Kontos, William Prowell, Dan Dunkel, and Colby Duratoff. We're talking about the convergence of physical and logical security and how that's already started and where it's going over the next few years. I think you'll find it very interesting, but I do have to warn you, it's a bit long. It comes in just short of an hour and 10 minutes. I've got another interview coming up that's very interesting. I'm talking next week with Jonathan Squire, who's the author of The Cowbird Project. Jonathan did a presentation at Black Hat earlier this year talking about how he's using some very inexpensive hardware to do some very interesting things, and I actually found some of the things he's doing to be more than a little bit scary in their implications. So that will be next week's interview. But before we get into the discussion, I'd like to thank the Astaro Corporation, my sponsors. They make the Astaro Security Gateway, which is a network security appliance that offers complete protection for your network. It does VPN, antivirus, spyware protection, in total 9 different security applications. It's easy to manage, powerful, affordable. Visit them on the web at www.astaro.com. Or you can call them at 877-427-8276, and they have a special offer that you can order a free demo unit and have it shipped to your house. Thanks again, Astaro. And so without any further ado, here's the discussion. Hello, this is Martin McKay, and we're here today to talk about the convergence of physical and virtual security, how the enterprises are bringing together both their physical security and the computer security at their sites. Joining me today is, first of all, Brian Kontos, who's the Chief Security Officer of ArcSight, an enterprise security management company, and you also may be familiar with him. He's the author of Enemy at the Water Cooler and was on the podcast a couple months ago. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing great, Martin. So. Pleasure being here.
And then we're joined by Bill Crowell, who's a security expert, former deputy director of the NSA, and an executive business leader. How are you today, Bill?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me to this.
And then we've got Colby Duratoff. I'm sorry if I mangled that, who's a GCIA, a GCNA, and is a senior security engineer at ArcSight. How are you today?
Thanks for having me here.
And last but not least... We're joined by Dan Dunkel, who is the president of New Era Associates, a company specializing in IT convergence. How are you doing today, Dan?
Great, Martin. Thank you.
Well, Brian, since this whole thing was kind of your idea, can you give us some background on exactly what it is we're talking about? What is the convergence of physical and virtual security?
Sure. So it's interesting. So we've got, all 5 of us on the call today, and we probably all have a little bit of a different definition of what convergence is and how we came to be interested in this topic. So I'll just kind of give you a background of what I think it is and sort of how I got, turned on to this subject. About 4 or 5 months ago, I was at the ArcSight User Conference, which is held annually. This particular one happened to be in Washington, D.C., and a number of partners and various customers from different verticals came up to me, and they were asking me about integration with physical security products, access control, RFID, video surveillance. And to me, that was pretty interesting because even though ArcSight as a company, we've actually been working and somewhat working in the convergence space for the last few years, especially with local, state, and federal government agencies, I hadn't really seen a lot of pull from the private sector showing interest in this. So because of all this interest from the private sector, I decided to do a little bit of research into it and see what types of things people are interested in and what the market was saying. And I came upon some research, and there was a real interesting study done by PricewaterhouseCoopers and CIO Magazine in April 2005. And the net of it was that they said about 53% of executives are reporting that their organizations are actually doing some type of physical and logical security convergence already. And this is up from just 29% in 2003. So the market's definitely been moving forward on this. It just hasn't been something that has been in the forefront of a lot of press and media lately. But again, the net is we're talking about bringing physical security solutions together with logical security solutions, having a synergistic a way of dealing with problems and reporting and mitigation, and being able to leverage the core competencies of both technical security analysts, for example, and a security guard. Now, obviously, the disciplines are very disparate, but there is some overlap. There are some synergies, and there's some operational efficiencies that can be gained and some security risk mitigation that can be gained by pulling these two groups together. So that's sort of my 50,000-foot view of the topic.
Martin, if I could just add a couple of things to what Brian said, because I think he's spot on with everything that he said. But convergence of these two fields is kind of a natural outgrowth of a number of factors that I think are driving people in this direction. One is the emergence of ubiquitous TCP/IP networks, including the Internet, which means that connectivity to widely dispersed physical facilities is becoming not only easier, but a lot cheaper. The second is that the Internet and TCP/IP has driven the availability of cheap and standards-based IP network elements and web services software, which means that implementing IP solutions for both physical security and logical security it is becoming easier. And the third is that it unifies the security practices and all the related support. For the first time, the HR role and the security role and the leadership roles in identity management and security services and so on can be unified on an enterprise network, which serves as the transport mechanism for all of those, but allows them for doing things that we couldn't do before, like looking for events with an ESM device that are centered around someone either being present or not being present in a facility.
Is there a business driver for all of this?
This is Dan. If I might just mention something, I certainly agree with Bill's concept of how cheaper communications are driving these solutions. And if you just look from the perspective of the explosion in outsourcing or international supply chains, certainly those are an offshoot of this commoditized and standard communication. And if you just think for a moment about all of the aspects from a security perspective, whether it's the type of security solutions that ArcSight is selling or whether it's physical security solutions, the scope of security has broadened just as the global supply chain and outsourcing has broadened. So it's brought to the table a slew of new areas that need security and where this convergence between physical and logical security needs to be accelerated. And I think the same communications network that has spawned outsourcing, supply chains, e-commerce is going to help accelerate security solutions moving forward.
Yeah, and this is Brian. I really like what Dan was saying there. It's sort of, you know, in the trenches, if you will, the feedback that I'm getting from large organizations oftentimes comes back to, you know, ROI on their physical security solutions. It used to be, you know, what's the ROI on my firewall or my IDS? You know, if I just throw up a firewall but I'm not doing log analysis, I'm not proactively looking through the information, monitoring it, am I really getting good ROI? I think the same thing now is applying physical security. It's the old adage that, you know, if you have an alarm system, when somebody throws a brick through a window, but no one's monitoring that alarm system, so even though, you know, lights are flashing, no one's responding, are you really getting a return on investment? So that seems to be a big driver. And also, and maybe Colby would want to expand on this a little bit, but the reasons, the use cases, the interest level from, you know, security teams, both operational and strategic teams looking at these blended threats and the causality between, you know, incident occurring and what could have been done to prevent or detect that is increasing. And customers are demanding integration of video analytics with logical systems and integration of RFID and HVAC with, you know, more traditional security solutions. And I'll just hand it over to Colby. I know he's got some really interesting case studies that he's dealt with, you know, regarding things like Chinese walls in financial networks and things of that. So maybe, Colby, if you have a couple things to add there.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. So as Brian mentioned, I mean, there's a ton of interesting use cases, and starting out with things like video surveillance, tying that in with your ESM system so that when there's some sort of breach in a data center, you can actually trigger television cameras to take a picture of who's doing something. Or integrating with environmental control systems. So if there's some type of, you know, air conditioners on the roof go out, now it may not be a breach as in somebody's attacking you, but it's something that's going to save you hundreds of thousands of dollars when your systems all overheat and the hard drives crash and CPUs die, your warranties are voided. So there's, I mean, starting from the initial use case that we've always talked about is the physical and VPN scenario where somebody's come into the building and now they're VPNing into the network at the same time. So they're either sharing their account or, you know, somebody's using their badge to access the facilities. And as we've been researching this, I mean, the use cases just keep coming and coming, and it's been pretty amazing some of the things we've seen.
So what are some of the business issues surrounding this? Are people going to need to make major upgrades to their internal systems, or are there their privacy concerns? What are some of the business issues that people may need to be concerned about?
This is Bill Kroll. I think the list is long, and I'm sure everyone on this podcast will be able to add to this list. But one of the big business drivers, as Dan pointed out, is just the cost of operation, the cost of having so many different separate silos of operation. In trying to operate physical and logical security systems. But one of the impediments to this becoming adopted quickly, quite frankly, is that the various pieces that need to be integrated to make the convergence work and work in the near term just are not coming together as quickly as everyone would like to see.
I agree very much with that comment, Bill, and I was going to ask you if you feel that part of the reason for this is as solutions are deployed across infrastructure, obviously business concerns are about higher productivity and lower cost of ownership. Is part of the problem that security in and of itself tends to be an afterthought as far as that business, is concerned?
I think that has been true until 9/11. After 9/11, a lot more emphasis has been placed on thinking about security as a part of the business process. And I'm a part of a group that's been looking at what's called a trusted enterprise. This whole examination of the trusted enterprise really revolves around whether or not there are business advantages to being thought of by your customers and by your suppliers and partners as being a trusted organization with trusted networks. But the truth of the matter is video gobbles up huge amounts of bandwidth. And although bandwidth is becoming cheaper, CIOs are confronted with how do I reconfigure my network so that video fits comfortably into my long-range plan. Identity management systems are extremely fragmented field. They're about 50 different pieces of a really good functioning identity management system. There are about 100 companies who are in that space, and none of them have more than about 5 or 6 of the 50 elements that are needed to make an integrated solution. So that's an impediment. So I think we're looking at the early stages of something that is going to happen, and it's going to happen as quickly as mature solutions appear in the marketplace push the people who follow the early adopters. Early adopters abound in this area. I mean, the Department of Defense has already deployed 5 million smart cards, which are both physical and logical security devices. So that's a pretty big that's a pretty big start. The next ones to go down will be their contractors, and then after that, financial institutions. So it is beginning to advance very rapidly.
Yeah, and I'll add a couple points to that. I mean, from the business side, a lot of the organizations that I see that are are starting to put these things together, they say that a big problem is just history. Historically, these groups have been so separate, and there's been poor communication. So they're not even really sure how they can leverage each other's capabilities. Then they have completely different responsibilities. I mean, physical security people are, you know, responsible from everything from signing people in to, you know, walking around the grounds to jump-starting people's batteries to, you know, escorting people out of the building. You know, the list goes on. IT security people hopefully aren't doing that type of thing. You know, and vice versa, their responsibilities are completely different. Their reporting structures are also different. So, you know, you have your security analyst reporting maybe to a security team director or a CISO or a CIO. The physical security guys might report up through human resources, legal facilities, or something of that nature. So the different reporting structures, the different job responsibilities, those have had an issue. But I think if you have executive support and you have stakeholder involvement from the key areas, those things can really be gotten past relatively quickly, I've noticed. And those don't tend to be something that you have to dwell on for months and months. They tend to resolve themselves because I think this is a topic that people just get. And to me, it really reminds me of a couple of years ago with the convergence of IP and voice. You know, when voice over IP and things like that started coming out, you used to have the telephony group and the IT group. And back in the day, these two groups didn't really play well together. Well, now they're pretty much the same group in a lot of cases. Well, I don't necessarily feel that that's going to be the way that physical and logical security goes. I still think you're going to have separate groups. I think we'll start thinking of security more general, more holistically. And then the problems really just become those of technical issues. Colby and I were at the ASES convention in San Diego just a few weeks ago, and it was really interesting because some of these vendors are just now starting to say, yeah, we think IP is a good idea. We think we're going to start generating logs and sending them over IP, and this whole internet thing, we think that's a wise decision. But a lot of the other vendors, they're all, oh yeah, we're doing XML output and everything we do is over IP and we're web driven and it's encrypted traffic and everything's digital and it's very flexible and cutting edge. So there is definitely a movement for the physical security companies to get into that space. And you're seeing companies like Cisco, Kroll, Brinks, and a number of other traditionally physically security-centric organizations moving into this realm. And, Colby, I'm not sure if you had some specific cases that you wanted to share from ASES, but there does seem to be a big movement into the logical side from the physical folks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just like you mentioned, those guys opening up their own MSSPs. And also, what we found really interesting, so we're down at ASES, like Brian mentioned, and we're talking to some people, and he goes, oh, sure, we output in YGAND. And Brian and I just look at each other, we're like, YGAND? I never even heard of it before. I guess it's some sort of output where they can send ones and zeros across a serial connection. I'm like, well, what about IP? And, you know, it seemed like, to me, what I saw was that a lot of the newer vendors with, like, leading-edge technologies, like the video analytic companies, those guys came into the space already focused on IP. Some of the older companies, like Honeywell and these guys, are the ones, as Brian mentioned, that were like, oh, yeah, IP is going to be in our next release. And Brian and I just looked at each other like, okay. And just to comment on something that Bill and Brian both mentioned earlier about the silos between the physical and logical security groups. So we're out visiting some of our financial customers when we released an insider threat solution. And part of the solution was to actually integrate badge reader events for the whole VPN scenario. And two of the customers we visited, the logical security team didn't even know who to contact within the organization to get a hold of logs from the physical security devices. And it took, at one place, it took till the next day to get the guy's contact information. Once we got the guy's information, he came up to the meeting room and he said, oh, no way. There's no way you guys are collecting my logs. And it took the CTO coming into the room saying that he thought it was a good idea. And it was just really strange to see these two groups who had never talked before start to think about this idea.
You know, Dan, I know you've been looking at also the distribution chain and the challenges there, and you might want to make a couple of comments about that because I think they fit right here into the discussion.
Thank you. I find that I do work with a lot of the physical security integrators and the IT integrators. And one of the issues, which may go back to Brian's point about communications, is also one of education. And it's interesting that Brian points out that a lot of the ASES membership and folks that were at the show this year are just starting to adopt IP. I'm sorry. In fact, I've had some people tell me that they view IP as an emerging technology, where I see it as something that's been proven and is more of a mature technology, certainly. So what some of the leading edge companies on the physical security side are starting to do is to actually go out and make the investment in IP personnel, both on the technical side and on the sales side. And for some of these companies, that's a difficult investment to make because it's more of a long-term commitment. They understand that while they may not see a return on that money right away, that it is going to position them into larger opportunities as this convergence market really does start to emerge in a big way. And I think that those are the smart companies that I'm seeing out there. There are others they're all of all shapes and sizes that are looking at the convergence of physical security and IT as something that's as many as 5 years away. And I caution against that very much. I think many times it's a cultural situation where a lot of the traditional physical security firms and the mentality of some of the executives is one of caution and a go-slow approach, where it's diametrically opposed to what is culturally part of an IT organization, which is innovation and speed. So I think that sometimes there's a rift there, and it's really position of these executives to have to start to see the trends, to realize what's happening, and to embrace convergence. And there are certainly examples for years and years about how converging technologies have changed industries. They need to understand exactly how it's going to change the physical security market, and the fact that, frankly, the physical security market is probably late to the party as far as solutions deployed across internal infrastructures in a wide area.
Well, you know, another thing I want to add to that, and this is something Dan turned me on to, I think just a couple of weeks ago, but it's intelligence fusion centers. And Dan put me in contact with a colleague at Rutgers University. And the interesting thing with the intelligence fusion centers are basically our local and state versions of intelligence agencies. And probably a lot of the listeners out there are aware that New York has its own foreign intelligence groups with, I think, last count, operations in over 26 different countries. You know, and this is a little bit different than things where, maybe just a few years back or pre-9/11, I might say. But the idea that you've got these local and state governments that are doing their own human intelligence collection, so they're no longer just consumers. They're not just waiting for a threat report or an alert coming from the federal government. They're actually going to be collecting information and sharing that. If you think of this like a Venn diagram, you have federal, state, and local. Now they're all collectors and they're all consumers from each other. You've got this great repository for sharing information, human intelligence, as well as IT and physical security information. The things they're most concerned about, as you might think of, is infrastructure and transportation, whether it's a power plant or a ferry system or some type of train system. I mean, these are telecommunications. These are the things that they're extremely concerned about. So regardless if the threat is a cyber attack or a cyber terrorist or something like that, or it's physically somebody, driving into a building and trying to blow something up, these are things that they need to know about. And I thought that it was very interesting. New Jersey and New York seem to be doing a lot in this area already, but also these fusion centers are popping up in places like L.A., Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Massachusetts, Virginia. Again, there's state and local versions of these, and I found that to be extremely interesting. And their whole idea is that not only do they collect the data and the physical and the logical and the human intelligence, but they're also sharing and pulling information from groups like the FBI, and I assume the Holy Grail at some point would even be things like the CIA and the NSA and that type of thing.
On the enterprise side, there's another phenomenon that is becoming enabled by the video analytics companies, and that is we've been talking about security and threats and attacks and all of those kinds of things. But in fact, if you have a physical security system, a video system that is widely dispersed within a retail center, for example, it is possible now to collect marketing information that's extremely interesting and useful marketing information about which shelves are being visited, which ones are being bought from after they're visited as opposed to not being bought from. So we're going to see not only the convergence of physical security with logical security, we're going to see other business uses of video information. that's collected by these systems.
Bill, you bring up
dual-use technology will also make it easier to sell to multiple departments as well.
You bring up a really important point, which is what is the downside of this from the privacy perspective? What's the dark side of this convergence? What are some of the things that we may be trading off for the convergence of all of these technologies?
Well, for a lot of reasons, including my background in the intelligence field, I'm very concerned about privacy, and I've spent most of my time on the several boards that I'm on in this area advising companies about privacy considerations. I think the important thing is to make sure that the systems are being used in public areas, not any private areas. Secondly, that they are their use is described or notified in privacy policies that are well published and even published with within the premises. So you've seen this before throughout history. When people deployed cameras in the very beginning, they put up signs that said these premises are monitored by video cameras and any shoplifting will be criminally prosecuted. Well, there's similar kinds of things that can be noticed, if you will, to customers and consumers about how video analytics are used and how the results of video are used. Most companies have very strict policies. The actual video cannot be used except for forensic purposes in prosecutions, but information that is derived from the video can be used in multiple ways so long as it's anonymized and the people in the images are not exposed.
I had a conversation with Bill a little bit earlier this week or late last week regarding video surveillance, and we started talking a bit about Las Vegas and privacy concerns. And and all of us on this call, I'm sure, and most of the listeners are very pro, IP, and we think it's a great thing. We'd like to see everything over IP. And I just asked Bill, because he's very well plugged into the space, and I said, why aren't all the casinos running, video surveillance over IP, as of, 5 years ago, when this stuff started becoming cheaper and easier to deploy and things like that? And one of the comments he made to me was, it just makes perfect sense. Like, when you've got everything going to digital, some type of video tape or something like that. It's stored in a room. The folks that can access that room are limited, and they have to key in or whatever, and the tapes are in a safe. You have a whole different slew of problems that hadn't been thought of before in terms of who's accessing information. Is it information encrypted in storage? Is it or stored in some secure fashion? Is it encrypted in transmission? It's very easy to pop up a wireless video surveillance camera. Like Bill said, are these in public areas or are some of these in private areas? So there's a lot of concerns, I think, there. And it's very interesting that some of these organizations that I think would get a huge benefit out of, inexpensive, video surveillance with great compression for storage, so they're greatly reducing their storage amount and they can go through the video quicker. I mean, there's just so many gains. But they're concerned themselves about, what are the security issues? What are the privacy issues involved if we make this step? So it's good to see that businesses are aware of this as well. It's not just sort of the consumer, the end user that has to be worried.
And by the way, putting these systems on IP backbones, in addition to all the things that Brian recounted from our conversation, introduces a number of vulnerabilities to the security systems themselves that haven't existed before or haven't existed in the way they will exist in the future. Just as an example, if a hacker can shut down an IP system for purposes of just doing it, imagine what a purposeful person could do to a physical security system if it was to their advantage in conducting some kind of crime. Every attack you've ever heard of, worms, viruses, Trojan horses, and so on, becomes a potential attack against the physical and logical security systems when they're on IP platforms. And so these have to be very carefully put together, secured, and watched. And just to relate it to what Brian does on the ESM side, ESM would have to spend a lot of time watching security systems to make sure they're not violated.
I'd have to agree with Bill there. I mean, as these systems start to move to, like, Windows operating systems and Linux operating systems, they're going to have the same vulnerabilities that we see across the board. And they're going through similar things with the SCADA and critical infrastructure. As they're starting to put SCADA systems running Windows, now all of a sudden these systems are vulnerable. They're not running proprietary operating systems. And so hackers don't need to have a deep understanding of some different operating system. They already know how to break into Windows. So now they can access these types of systems as well.
Well, a great example of that is the Davis-Bice nuclear plant in Ohio. I mean, it wasn't a targeted attack. It just happened that their safety control systems were impacted and disabled, in fact, by SQL Slammer, and it lasted for several hours. To Bill's point, I mean, this was a worm. It was pretty. It was opportunistic. It wasn't a targeted attack on the nuclear power plant, but still, it had the capability to knock out a safety control system for a nuclear power plant for several hours. That's scary stuff, right? So, everything we're talking about, when you start talking about SCADA networks, like Colby mentioned, and you talk about maybe the DoD becoming more net-centric and, having, military and intelligence operating more over IP networks. That's scary stuff, I think, and that's the stuff that worries me. And I think that's why you need these, some type of automated approach, some type of, correlation and analytical tools that can help you, look at this physical security data, look at this digital information from logical security devices and pull it together and make sense out of it. And, when you're talking about nuclear power plants, it just, it increases the severity factor quite substantially, I think.
You asked earlier, Martin, about the drivers. In the case of SCADA, I was the keynote speaker at the SCADA conference earlier this year in San Diego. And in the case of SCADA, these industries, power industry, the water industry, the nuclear power industry, all of these industries are being pushed very rapidly into having full SCADA over IP by the sheer cost of communications that are related to the old ways of doing SCADA. And SCADA is a very old system. It's poorly documented. It has known vulnerabilities that were kind of ignored before because it was hard to get to, because you had to make your way through switches and so on to get to it. With IP-based systems, there is a huge concern about the safety of a number of our critical infrastructure items and how resilient they would be if someone conducted a cyber attack or a cyber and physical attack simultaneously.
Right. At ArcSight, we're just involved in a project sponsored by the Department of Homeland Security and several of the major oil and gas companies in the United States called Project Logic, where they actually wanted to look at, it's sort of similar to how what Brian and Dan were talking about earlier, a fusion center type approach, but it was an operations center where they were not only looking at, logical security events on their corporate network and their process control networks and their refining networks, but they were actually bringing in events from systems like Televent that are talking about different flow pressures on their pipelines and things like that. But to try to correlate that information, have one single pane of glass where an operator can sit and find problems, rather than having, an operator in the SCADA control center, an operator in the security control center, and those people never talk. So now they can start to see problems across the board.
This is Dan. One of the things that I find interesting, and perhaps Colby or Brian would want to expound upon it, is, we all know that the data center is a target for a cyber attack, but a lot of folks don't really think about the telephony infrastructure as being this PBX, which is in fact a computer system as well with its own software and what have you, and vulnerabilities. And I wonder if those telephony centers are as hardened, if you will, against a vulnerability as the data center is.
When does convergence stop? Maybe a better way of putting it, when doesn't convergence make sense for companies to do?
I just think it's and to Dan's point and yours, Martin, it's, you're right. When do we stop converging things? And I think we learned a while ago, circa 2000 maybe, people were saying, hey, it's a good idea to look at not just the IDS logs, but correlate them to the firewall logs. Hey, it's great that we saw that there was an attack, but did it get through the firewall? Did it not get through the firewall? Did it hit a vulnerable device? Did it hit a device that's mission critical? I mean, the days of saying, okay, I see IBS event, you know, those have been gone for a long time. And now I think we're maturing to the fact we're saying, well, you know, attacks can be coming from anywhere. It could be mobile malware. It could be some individual with a smartphone that walks in with infected, Symbian OS, and it goes via Bluetooth and infects someone's laptop, and from there the entire infrastructure. It could be somebody doing fraud over a PBX system or injecting malicious code over some voice over IP system that gets into your workstations and things like that, or the physical side. So really, I don't necessarily know if there's a hard perimeter where convergence does and doesn't stop, but certainly having more information is better, but being able to analyze that can be more difficult. So I think people do need to leverage automated tools. They do need to leverage advanced analytics and visualization capabilities, things that will let them drill through, you know, hundreds of millions of events, if not more, when we're talking about massive convergence a day, to get to really what are the key critical points. Because we're not going to see security teams that are in the hundreds or thousands of people, I don't think, ever. So they are going to have to leverage these tools. If we keep on throwing more information at them and more complex case studies, they're really going to need some help there. And I really think that if you look at sort of the evolution, as Bill had pointed out earlier, I mean, this has been coming for a while. It's not a question of if it's going to happen. It's a question of, you know, when this is just going to be mainstream. I think ultimately, you know, if we had this podcast a few years from now, we'll be talking about how, you know, security is just a general statement that applies to all these fields, and, you know, what gets added into it will just be market-driven.
And I do think you raise an important issue in terms of just how far does it go. I saw an ad the other day for Gillette's newest razor, the Fusion, which has five blades on the front and one on the back. All of that to solve a problem that they started when they put more than two on the front. We could get to that point in convergence where we have silly ways of converging these two areas. But right now, everything that's happening makes sense either economically or in terms of the business case or in terms of being able to build new services that couldn't have existed in separate siloed versions of security.
And I think that, as the threats become more advanced, then we have to start looking at new avenues. I mean, everybody has a firewall now, so it's much harder to just break into a network through the perimeter. I mean, it's, you know, most people are not doing the allow all and deny a couple things. It's almost deny everything except for very specific services from very specific places. So hackers are obviously not going to stop, but they're going to go around and they're going to look for other ways to get into the organization. And like Dan mentioned, that could be through voice over IP. I mean, they're new systems, and nobody's really thinking that anybody's going to come in that way. And so something I noticed when we were at Black Hat was, I remember for a while they were sending out the emails about the phishing, saying, you know, this is your bank, please reply to this email with your password. So my aunt called me, and she's telling me, oh, I got this email. I was like, yeah, don't reply to it. Anyways, so she says, well, I read something that says, don't reply to the emails. Your bank will never email you, but they'll call you. So next year, what do you see? Now there's vishing, where they're setting up a free asterisk server. They're recording voicemails on there. And now they don't send you an email, but the system automatically dials you and says, hi, this is your bank calling. We need you to enter your PIN and your account number. As they do this, they record all the information. And so they just go around and around and around and look for new ways to exploit people.
Yeah, it's almost a broken record. I mean, it's layered security. It's defense in depth. I mean, you can't just have a firewall today. You can't just have a alarm system on your Windows. It's a number of things. And then you have to worry about people with trust and access. You know, the greater the trust, the greater the betrayal when you're talking about, you know, malicious insiders. If I'm a terrorist organization, am I going to spend all the time and resources trying to hack into a power plant? I doubt it. Why don't I just try to recruit somebody? Why don't I try to, you know, use blackmail or extortion or find somebody that's politically sympathetic to my cause, what have you? I mean, these I think are the real threats. And you already have somebody that has access internally. I don't want to just know if they're trying to plant a virus on a server. I want to know if they're, you know, hitting buttons and flipping switches as well. And maybe they're doing that as well as trying to plant a virus. Maybe it's a multi-homed attack. And this isn't some pie-in-the-sky Hollywood notion of what might happen. I mean, it's been known, it's public, that we've seized computers and manuals that Al-Qaeda was using in training camps that were just full of SCADA information related to dams and other structures. So we know it's just not us trying to proactively think of this from a defensive perspective and say, hey, let's proactively beat the attackers. We know the attackers are already thinking this way as well, and they're saying how they can get in.
It's interesting in from a security perspective that we're really in this extreme security environment today. Post 9/11, you've got the Al-Qaeda's whose stated purpose is to disrupt the economy in some way, whether it's bombing or destroying somehow shipping ports or disrupting the supply chain, plus all these other threats that we're discussing, internal theft, retail theft, violence in the workplace, so on and so forth. It's all coming together, and it's as if this the notion of security is elevating from a threat level, and I think in terms of how the security executive is going to be viewed, I think because of this dynamic, that position is going to be elevated within the organization as well. And maybe it's part of having that trusted enterprise that Bill referred to earlier, because as an investor, you want to take into account all of these threat levels and understand how a company that you might be investing in is protecting itself against this extreme security environment that we live in today. And I think that probably gets back to a bit of that trusted enterprise and where all the various shareholders or stakeholders are in this security environment moving forward. It's really expanded.
Yeah, Dan brings up a great point, and to the points other folks made, I mean, these don't have to be, you know, malicious things that are causing these problems. Look at Hurricane Katrina in 2005. There was actually several refineries in the southern coast of the U.S. that were affected by this, and you know, changed theoretically, had a huge impact on the gas lines because of what occurred there. So I mean, you know, being able to tie security and safety together, these things are all starting to overlap. I mean, I've even seen this on a personal level. This is just a little bit off topic, but I think it sort of accentuates the point, is that I was visiting my niece who was 6 years old, and she wanted to go to the store with me. It was the two of us, and I was driving a two-door pickup, and she goes, but I can't sit in the front seat with you because I'm too small, and I have to sit in the back. And do you have this type of, you know, safety system, and do you have a booster seat? I'm like, oh my God. It was back when I was a kid, can we just sit in the bed of the truck? But you know, so I think the security consciousness has really increased, and apparently it's starting at a very early stage these days.
So as a security professional, do I need to start learning more about physical security in addition to all of the computer security expertise I've already got?
What do you think, Colby? You've talked to a lot of these IT guys, and I think that question's come up a number of times.
I would really say, as a logical security expert, you should just know people in the physical security, you know, with physical security expertise. I don't think you're going to be an expert at both. I mean, unless you're focusing on, like, the convergence topic. I think if you're an IDS administrator, if you're running, you know, an operations center, you're going to want to know who in the physical security department to talk to that's been working with these technologies for years and years. And you're going to want to, I mean, you might need to help them be able to gather events from these types of systems, so you need to be familiar with the technologies. But I don't think you need to be familiar as in, like, operating these technologies.
Yeah, go out and reread your physical security section, your CISSP manual, and figure out how tall the fences should be around your perimeter.
Right.
As somebody who's working in both these areas, I'm involved with companies in both areas, in physical security and video surveillance and logical security, but I'm also involved with customers, including government customers who are dealing with it. What I'm seeing is that the CIO is not trying to become a physical security specialist, but they are beginning to hire people who are technically qualified in video over IP, video analytics, and all of the technical issues related to owning, operating, and integrating these services into the backbone networks. And they are forcing the various stakeholders within enterprises to begin talking to each other, because Dan had it right earlier. The guys who were doing the badges, you know, in most cases aren't even known to the people who are handing out passwords or are doing the logical security pieces. In DoD, what they did is they put the whole CAC, Combined Access Guard, project into the manpower portion of DoD that dealt with HR and physical security things. And so they forced convergence, but not everyone has the ability to do that. So I think we're going to see a lot of different models, but ultimately it means that there are going to have to be some video technical experts integrated in with the ID managers and all the other technical experts.
I think also to elaborate a little bit on the IT security expertise, you know, as far as physical security experts, I think what IT does a relatively good job of and has done for many years is getting an understanding of the actual business that they're supporting. And I think that that probably lends itself to this fact that they're going out and hiring some physical security, or in this case video IT expertise for those for their own operation. It's, you know, whether it's they've been supporting engineering, manufacturing, financial, or sales over the years as far as being able to deploy solutions and increase productivity, reduce the cost of business, and so on. I think security is going to take a much larger role in how the organization works across all those disciplines, and that they're going to be right in the middle of it, but again, not having to be experts, but being smart enough to hire the support that they need.
So what are some of the biggest problems that we've been seeing with convergence? Obviously, one of them is the fact that there's just so much data that's gotta be gotten through, but what other sorts of problems are centered around this convergence?
Well, certainly the technical difficulties are there. Physical security solutions upgrade at a much slower pace in general than logical security solutions. It's not uncommon to see an access control system or analog video system that's been in place for, you know, more than a decade. How many of us have firewalls and IDSs that are a decade old? Probably not very many.
Nope.
But that's a problem. They tend to be very unique and rigid, especially these legacy products. You know, they can do one thing and they do that one thing well. Some of those products actually do produce logs, but maybe it's over serial or maybe it's over some LPR, line printer output. And then let's say you are able to work with that and you're able to set up like a syslogs next generation server to read that LPR output. And then you get the output and it tends to be a bunch of page numbers and hash marks. And once you filter all that out, which is fine, you find out that the information doesn't even track who came in and what time they did it. It's all maintenance information. Hey, I've been up and running for, you know, 30 days straight, no problems, no error codes, things like that. So I think that's a huge problem, getting these older systems to integrate, and if not, if it's just infeasible, actually upgrading the physical security systems, because that's a big investment for a lot of organizations. And while it's a lot cheaper to go out there and, you know, install wireless video surveillance than it would be to have these hardwired analog, you know video surveillance systems, it's still a cost. You know, you have to get a lot of people involved. Where's the upside? And, you know, there's some education and some evangelism that still has to be done on this topic to get organizations to understand this.
I really think the combined access cards, as Bill mentioned earlier, are going to help, because what I've noticed a lot is that the physical access systems, they talk about a badge ID. And the badge ID in some database in HR land is probably mapped to who owns it. But when it actually reports the event, it doesn't talk about a username. So when I log on to my terminal, it talks about my Windows domain account, you know, logon name. And there's no way for me to correlate those two pieces of information. Now, once there's an access card that lets me in the building and lets me on my terminal, I have one username or one ID, whatever it's going to be, and that way I can take events and correlate them with other events that are occurring on the network. So that's one of the biggest problems, and I think that's where the Common Access Cards will come in and help a lot.
So how is this being implemented differently in the private sector versus what we might be seeing in government?
Well, I think the biggest difference is that government tends to do these things through large contracts over a long period of time. And very often that means that the technology integration is very uneven. DoD began the CAC card deployments back in about the year 2000, actually pre 9/11. The technology upgrades that they are having to do now, because they're still deploying CAC 6 years after they started, are really quite extraordinary. And so the costs are very, very large, hundreds of millions instead of millions of dollars. One of the other big differences, though, is that the government is willing to be a little bit more of a risk taker in some new areas, particularly if it's a DoD or intelligence organization, as opposed to a mainline civil organization in government. Nevertheless, overall, government tends to move early and take a long time to do it. The enterprise customers tend to try to look for mature solutions and then do it in a much shorter period of time. So what I think we're about to see is what Jeffrey Moore calls crossing the chasm. We're about to see very large-scale deployments across enterprise spaces that were taking years to do in the government area.
I agree with Bill about large-scale deployments occurring in the enterprise, and I think one of the things that's going to happen in tandem with that is this security executive's going to be elevated, because one of the things that has to occur here is, it's all part of communication and collaboration, and I think that's one of the cultural things that's changing as well, where security, at least on the physical side, used to be deployed in a silo, and it could have been sort of a one or two company endeavor. Now, as you're starting to move toward true convergence and you're deploying on a much wider scale, you're involving many more partners, you've got to collaborate, and you've got to really be able to communicate at all various levels, especially at that executive level, to be able to let the board know the benefits that this collaboration, these security deployments are going to bring to the company in a variety of ways, whether it's securing physical, logical assets, whether it's going to be a trusted enterprise, and be something that your shareholders are going to be demanding. But that type of a communication requirement is going to happen at the board level, and I think that as the security executive gets elevated, the whole issue of security is going to be elevated, and that's going to result in these much larger deployments, and we'll have some great reference accounts we can be talking about in the near future.
Yeah, I think Dan really hits an important point there, which is I think in the enterprise space that it's going to require people to, and leaders specifically, just to think differently about the problem. It reminds me of a quote that Christopher Kelly, he's a vice president at Booz Allen, and at last year's ASOS conference, and I still remember what he said, and I'm kind of summarizing it, but he said, convergence is requiring security leaders to learn much more about the business, and change their perspective on their position from really being one of a functional subject matter expert, which many are today, to a business person that has a lot of functional knowledge. So there's a bit of a switch, a bit of a change in how I think people are having to think about security, and that's certainly happening at the leadership level.
And it may require a different type of security leader. And it's not that, I don't have anything against ex-law enforcement or ex-military folks, but in some organizations you may have a security executive who has put 25 or 30 years in the FBI or in the military, and they're coming into this particular enterprise organization for 3 or 5 years before they permanently retire. That while that expertise is certainly needed, that may not be the executive level person that you're going to require to drive convergence across the enterprise worldwide. To Brian's point, that person may need more of a business discipline and be able to bring in physical, logical security, understand various business operations, have a little bit of sales and marketing acumen as well, and be able to sell these ideas and get the required budget from the board of directors and the executive staff. Different skill set.
So as a wrap-up, I'd like to know what each of you gentlemen think about where this is going to be going over the next year, 3 years, 5 years. And Dan, I'm going to start with you. What do you think the future holds?
I think what's going to be happening over the next year or so is that you're going to see, from the standpoint of deploying security solutions across the enterprise, that the CIO and the IT organization are going to be getting more of this type of responsibility. I think it's interesting because, on the one hand, it's difficult for physical security practitioners to understand how to sell ROI at an executive level or talk to those business issues Brian mentioned earlier and still have some understanding of IT infrastructure that maybe historically they haven't had to have before. On the flip side of that, the IT person is getting more responsibility for physical security operations, which they're really not prepared for either. So I think you're going to see in the near term more of this cross-pollinization, if you will, where some of the physical security skill sets and expertise are coming over to the IT side. Longer term, I think there's going to be much more of a merger of these type of skill sets as more of the distributors on the IT and the physical security side, through either mergers and acquisitions or collaboration and partnering, are going to start to understand that this market opportunity is absolutely huge. And unless they have those respective skill sets, they're not going to be able to capitalize on it as much as they can. Now, for the longer term, 5 years and more, I think it's to Bill's point where these organizations are going to have to be trusted enterprises where they're going to be judged on how well they implement security on the front end of their business processes, whether it's a supply chain or protecting data from internal threat, which is Colby and Brian's expertise. But they're going to have to be able to prove that they've incorporated security at the physical and logical level in everything they do. And that may wind up being a situation where their stock valuations are a result of how well they do that. Now, I remember not too long ago at the height of the tech bubble when, a lot of these companies were judged by how well they were deploying a IT strategy for e-commerce and other types of applications, and that more or less, was a positive reflection on their stock valuation. I think you're going to see security take on that same kind of a role where if you can prove your supply chain worldwide is more secure than the next guy's, perhaps your stock is going to get a higher valuation, and that's going to be how you're judged. So I think longer-term security is going to be extremely front and center and in front of the business processes as well, rather than an afterthought.
I agree with you completely. I'm already seeing some of that in my own business practices. Colby, how do you think the technologies could be changing over the next 5 years?
Initially over the first, the next year, I think there's going to start to be, there's already started to be, but the thought leaders are going to continue to start integrating some of these different physical security products into the logical world. I mean, everything from the environmental controls, video surveillance, especially the video analytics, I think that's going to be an emerging thing. The SCADA systems, I think we'll start to see, the thought leaders start to build these integrated operation centers, like, for example, the Project Logic with the, bringing in SCADA events into their logical security center. And so there'll be initial integrations, and then I think after that, it'll extend to be, tighter integrations where, talking to APIs instead of just reading log files. And as the physical security vendors start to, come up with this too, they're going to make it easier to integrate with their products because it's almost going to be a requirement. So in the logical world, 3 years ago, people weren't even thinking about making it easy for products like ArcSight to integrate with them. Now people come to us and say, what can we do to make it easier? How can we send an event in your format, you know, so that they want to integrate now? So I think that's what we'll start to see as these vendors and as their customers say, look, we need you to integrate with, you know, ArcSight. And they'll say, okay, well, we have to do this. It's a requirement now. So they'll expand their technologies, make the integrations easier. And then I think 5 years out, it'll be the norm. You're going to have your physical and logical security devices reporting into one system, integrated operations centers. And I think it'll just be across the board. It'll be something that you see everywhere.
Bill, how do you think government and the boardroom are going to adjust to this convergence over the next 5 years?
Well, government just completed a process of developing a government standard. It's called HSPD-12, the Homeland Security Presidential Directive number 12. And that actually interrupted the deployments of badges and converged identity management systems across the government. Now that that has been adopted, there actually are budgets that are being allocated to begin deployments again. And the CAC card will have some minor adjustments to make, but it is somewhat of a model for how to do it. But what it'll do is it'll unleash, to the extent budgets allow, it will unleash the convergence phenomena within government agencies that are needing to upgrade their physical security in particular and their human resource systems, which, by the way, is a lot of the agencies, because a lot of them really only have the old mag stripe or not even that, just a picture badge. And they have a need to greatly improve their logical security, and the opportunity to build on a converged platform is just very, very tempting, particularly since now they have support in the form of a standard that if they follow, they get money allocated to them. I think that the fact that HSPD-12 will be pushing the government will also drag the integrators and the aerospace industry along with the government, because the directive actually specifies that they must also have systems that are based on this standard. Now, so far as the boardroom is concerned, I'm actually on the board of two companies that are in this space. One that's that builds the backbone IP networks that drive IP-based video surveillance. And what's happening there is a lot of work is going into encoding devices that allow companies to use existing analog cameras, which, by the way, are better in most cases than the IP cameras that are in the market at the same price points. And what's happening there is that finally the video surveillance deployments can come in at the under $200 per camera number, as opposed to the over $2,000 per camera that was out there in the analog world, and enjoy all these advantages of integrating new business purposes, safety, marketing, et cetera, being able to build both decentralized or distributed systems, but be able to view images in a centralized fashion or off-site, for example, for law enforcement purposes. And what I'm really seeing is that big players are now coming into the market. An early one into the market was EMC, but they seem to have faded from it. But now you're seeing Cisco, IBM, Unisys, a number of very large integrators who are moving into this market. And again, government leading the way, the new South Border Initiative, 700 miles of border being covered, is going to drive further reductions in prices and further developments in command and control systems and integration. And so I see these enterprises, like, let me give you some examples. These are examples. Big retailers like Home Depot, Lowe's, who have very high value products that tend to disappear in large numbers, are thinking about deployments in order to protect against insider theft. But it also helps them with safety issues, liability issues, marketing issues. And so as this price point comes down, what I'm seeing is a large number of RFPs in the marketplace asking for a new approach to converged security that will help them drive their business as well as their security.
So, Brian, how do you see the opportunity for the next 5 years for convergence?
Yeah, so actually, right before I get to that, I just want to mention one thing. We mentioned Project Logic a couple times, and for any listeners that want to Google that, it's actually spelled L-O-G-I-I-C, which stands for the Linking the Oil and Gas Industry to Improve Cybersecurity. So it's a very, very interesting information. It's all about convergence and SCADA. I believe if you go to Sandia, a national laboratory site, which is sandia.gov, you can get some more information. But again, Project Logic with two eyes, very, very useful information, really ties into what we've been talking about. And then just to summarize, I suppose, without just becoming a tautology of what everyone's already said at this point, I really think that, you know, we've shown proof positive that, you know, during our discussions that communication across these groups and cross-device analysis and cooperative investigation, there's really an upside to that, and especially with some of the new emerging threats. You know, I think that the new technologies are creating a lot of overlap between physical and logical security boundaries, and I think managers within these teams are discovering creative ways to not only deploy the technology, but share budgets, integrate various initiatives, and really work across functional boundaries in order to achieve sort of this converged security environment. So that's kind of what I'd like to leave it at. I really think this is what's emerging. I think that managers are getting smarter, not just from a technical perspective, but from an operational and a sort of a budgeting perspective. And I think we're going to just see more of that as the years go on.
So, Brian, where can people find out more about you?
Where can they look to find out more about me?
Yeah.
you can certainly just Google me. I've got a book called Enemy at the Water Cooler on, you know, your favorite websites, bookpool.com or amazon.com. You know, on the ArcSight website, I've got several of the podcasts and webcasts that we've done. Colby and I actually have done a couple of webcasts on this this concept as well. So if anybody's interested in not only hearing but actually seeing a PowerPoint presentation that supports some of these concepts, please visit ArcSight.com and check out some of the convergence webcasts. I believe our marketing team called it Hacking the Hallways. So anybody interested, I just download it. It's free. Check it out and give it a listen.
Bill, as a ex-NSA deputy director, are you allowed to have a website or a blog that people can look at?
Well, I don't have a website or blog. It's not because I'm not allowed to. It's because I just don't choose to. I'm very involved in consulting and serving on board, so it keeps me pretty busy, and trying to operate a blog or maintain a presence on the web is really more than I want to try and do. However, like Ryan, if you Google me, you'll get a ton of references. If in particular you look at some of the sites that cover SCADA conferences or Security Industry Association or whatever, you'll find some of my presentations on this subject, as a matter of fact, on convergence. And, of course, you'll find some of the stuff that's related to my past history in the government as well. That's probably the best way, though, is to Google my name and specific subjects. Because if you just Google my name, you'll get mostly the government stuff.
Yeah, this is Brian, but Bill's very modest. But if you go to the NSA site, it's hard not to find a ton of information about him and his, you know, several decades with the NSA and some of the what I think are extremely interesting projects that he's been involved in. So certainly check that out if you have interest in sort of that side of things.
Yeah, contrary to most people's opinion, there's a lot of information on the NSA site, particularly the museum site.
I'll have to make sure to look there in the near future. Colby, I mean, obviously people can find you at ArcSight, but do you have any other writing that you do?
There's some white papers out there I've written for SANS and other organizations. Mostly contact ArcSight. They know how to get a hold of me.
Okay, and Dan, last but not least, where can people find out more information about you and your company?
I've got a website at neweraassociates.com, and posted on there are many of the articles that I've written for Today's Systems Integrator, which is a twice-monthly e-column for Security Magazine. And there's other presentations and things like that that I give people access to as well.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, gentlemen. Have a good day.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Martin.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Brian, Bill, Dan, and Colby. That was a long discussion, but I think it was worth every minute of it. In fact, this is a question I have for you, my audience. It went long. But in the future, do you feel that I should let these go as long as they need to and we'll deal with it? Or would you prefer if I cut these in half and give you a portion every week? This one could have gone either way. Give me some feedback. Send me an email at nsp@mckeay.net. Or you can leave me a voicemail at 916-231-9479. Visit the blog at www.mckeay.net. Again, next week I'll be talking with Jonathan Squire of the Cowbird Project. In honor of the holiday, I am going to leave you with Halloween by the Coffin Shakers. Thank you and good night.
The sun is setting in the west, the shadows are growing tall. A bad moon's on the rise tonight, the chiller of the night call. Tonight the graves are opening up, the strangest sights are seen. Keep all doors and windows locked this night of Halloween. I sneak into your dreams at night, my voice enthralls your mind. You cannot fight my cold device or the evil that lurks behind. The twilight mist dims your view, it's all like in a dream. Revelations of doom appears this night of Halloween. Souls were unclean, lives that should have never been, come to life on Halloween. Setting in the west, the shadows are growing tall. A bad moon's on the rise tonight, the chiller of the night call. Tonight the graves are opening up, the strangest sights are seen. Keep all doors and windows locked this night of Halloween.
We are the undead, immortal. No man can harm us unless he pours a stake through our hearts or beheads us. No one is protected from us unless they hold the hated cross.
You're a vampire.
Yes. I can savor the most extreme of Satan's delights. I can feed on the blood of a human victim.
Not me.
It is a test. One who is dedicated to the devil and his deeds will not die by a vampire's bite, but will become one of the undead. A vampire. The good and the innocent die.